Hare Krishna. So, welcome to the Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam seminar. I was going to say you're going to get the computer in the way there. So, we'll continue on where we left off last night. We were talking about the topic of health. This has been divided up into a couple of segments. The first one was an overview of Prabhupada's approach to health, at least from his own personal point of view. And then now we're going to start talking about the actual health issues that Prabhupada himself was dealing with. We already talked yesterday about the heart attacks that he had when he first came to America. And a few mentions, one or two things that happened to him in his earlier life before he came to the West. And now we'll go into a few specifics that I noticed when I was traveling with Prabhupada that we had to deal with. And then after the segment on Srila Prabhupada's own health, then we'll look at Prabhupada's advice to other devotees about how they should maintain their health. So, now, one thing is my eyes have just... Just returning to normal. I had some examination this morning, and my pupils got a bit dilated because of the examination, so they're just coming back into focus. I hope I can read this stuff now. Alright, let's see. Okay, so we mentioned yesterday, Prabhupada commented that he never wanted to be taken to a hospital. Because Prabhupada, you know, he had a lot of experience with the health department. He was running a pharmacy. So he knew the health industry from the inside. And although he was dealing with mainly herbal remedies and things like this, but he also had to deal with allopathic doctors. Many of the doctors in Allahabad were his friends, and he was one of the main suppliers in northern India, actually, of various health medicines and things like this. So Prabhupada knew a lot about the health industry. There's not so much an industry in India in those days, not like it is now. But at least Prabhupada knew what went on. He knew what was going on in the labs when they made medicines and all these things. So Prabhupada's mood was that he never wanted to be taken to the hospital. And many times he told us this. And especially, you know, as he was getting older, he would admonish his servants and secretaries that if I get ill, even if I fall in a coma or anything, but don't take me to the hospital. So that was drilled into us. So one example of that, this was on March the 5th, 1977. Prabhupada was in Mayapur. This was my second spell in Mayapur with Prabhupada. I had been with him in 76 at the Mayapur Festival for a couple of months, and then we returned in early February to Mayapur, and Prabhupada stayed about a month and a half, and it was during this period that he got exceptionally ill, and just before the beginning of the Gopurnima Festival, Prabhupada got very, very seriously ill. He had very high temperatures, and he actually didn't attend most of the Gopurnima Festival in 1977. And in fact, that illness he never really recovered from. It was more or less the end of his preaching leela at that point because of the condition of his body. So there were several days when Prabhupada had a very high temperature. Nobody was allowed to come and visit with him. And our whole routine was completely changed. Basically, Prabhupada's daily routine, at least when I joined him, it was very well established. We'll start from the morning time. He would go out for his morning walk just on the crack of dawn. He would walk for an hour. He would come back. He would greet the deities, receive Guru Puja, give the Bhagavatam class. He would come in. He would take a breakfast, which was mainly of fruits, little muri or puffed rice, sometimes little fried thing extra that he might ask for. Then he would take an hour's rest. Then in the morning time for a couple of hours, he would meet with either the temple managers or if there were any special guests that had requested an interview with him or a meeting with him, then he would see them. At 11:30, he would take his massage, main massage of the day. That would go on till about 1 o'clock, and about an hour and a half. That was a full body massage with oil. Then he would take his bath. After that, he would have his lunch. Then he would take another hour's rest after lunch. And then in the afternoon, at least when we were in India, Prabhupada would have open darshans. Anybody could come. And for a couple of hours, Prabhupada would speak. People would be coming and going, or they would just sit down and listen. And that would go on up until the evening arati. And then when the conch shells blew for the evening arati, then Prabhupada would send everybody out to go and attend the arati. Then he would have a couple of hours either to himself, or again he would meet with the temple managers, local GBCs, discuss different issues with them. And then in the night time, about 9:30, he'd have a hot glass of milk, and then he would again take rest for about an hour or an hour and a half. And then after that, then he would get up 11:30 or 12 o'clock at night, and then he would spend the whole night translating the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that would take him through, of course, till Mangal Arati. Then he would freshen up and, you know, he would be out on his morning walk again. So you couldn't really say that Prabhupada's day, had a definite beginning and a specific end in the way that ours does. You know, we work during the day, we go to bed at night, we sleep, we're out cold, we're unconscious for 6 or 8 hours. We get up, you know, the next morning seems like a whole new beginning. But with Prabhupada, it was completely different. You know, one day rolled into the next, and there was no really defined beginnings and ends. You know, he was simply preaching Krishna consciousness the whole time. If you only take an hour's rest, that's not, any doctor will tell you, that's not really resting. You know, you give a little rest to the body, but you don't really, you know, rest the mind that much. You don't get deep sleep. And Prabhupada was, you know, on the totally transcendental platform, so he obviously didn't need that. And in fact, when he met George Harrison in July of 76 when we were in London, he mentioned that, because George had been shown some of Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada was asking him if he was reading his books, and he actually gifted to him a new volume of the Seventh Canto. So George confessed that he wasn't a big reader. He said, but he liked to chant. But he said, reading, he said, anyway, he said, there's just so much. He said, you've written, he said, I don't know how anybody could do so much writing. You know, he said, it'd take a whole lifetime just to read everything. So Prabhupada said, yes. He said, actually, he said, ordinarily, an ordinary human being could not do it. And George said, well, I don't know, you know, how you could find the time to do so much writing when you're doing so many other things as well. Then Prabhupada said, I don't sleep. That's how I do it. He said, and actually, he said, I don't like to sleep. He said, I think when I go to sleep, now I'm wasting my time. He said, I actually think like that. So that was Prabhupada's mood. So that was his daily routine. But at the Maipur Festival in 1977, all of that went out the window. Prabhupada became extremely ill, and for 6 days practically he didn't eat anything. He was simply resting most of the time. We had to have devotees with him 24 hours a day. And so the Prabhupada's personal party kind of expanded. We added on 2 or 3 other devotees so that we could take it in shifts to make sure, you know, that somebody was on hand if anything happened. And one big Ayurvedic doctor was called from Calcutta. He was giving some medicines also, some treatment. But it was very, very serious, and it was the worst that I had seen him. And as I say, after this illness, he never really kind of recovered from that. He was always, you know, very weak, and his body really was just finished at that point. So anyway, this was on March the 5th. This was after a few days of this fever had been running. So Prabhupada's temperature is returned to normal this morning. Dr. Ghosh came in and he prescribed several Western medicines. Now Dr. Ghosh was one of Prabhupada's old friends from Allahabad. He was an allopathic doctor. And he had heard that Prabhupada was sick, so he came from Allahabad to Mayapur just to see if he could help, because he was as old as Prabhupada was, in his 80s. So he's well-meaning, but he is an illusion, thinking that medical science can at least prolong one's life. At one point he suggested that the best thing would be for Prabhupada to go to Bombay and enter into a clinic there where they have a machine that can suck out all one's blood, clean it, and put it back in again. Nobody responded when he mentioned this. He was making these suggestions because that was what all he knew. And nobody, you know, took him up on the offer. After he had gone out, Prabhupada told us that his godbrother Tirtha Maharaj had died in a machine with all tubes sticking out from him. And he mimicked another godbrother, Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji, who had informed him afterwards that Tirtha Maharaj had had all the most up-to-date methods. Prabhupada shook his head. He said he was very proud of this. You know, Prabhupada didn't approve. Died with all tubes and everything, you know. But it didn't do him any good. So, and what had happened, because Tirtha Maharaj used to live in Mayapur, when he got sick, they took him to Calcutta and that's where he died. He left his body there. He could have, they could have left him, you know, where he was, and he could have left in the dham. So anyway, then Prabhupada told us, he admonished us very strongly, once again, that we should not disturb him, and that he wanted to die without any hospital. So he was saying, don't disturb me putting tubes and needles and all these different things. I've got a problem with my computer. It keeps blanking out.
The charger?
No, it's not the charger. It's something to do with Windows.
Okay.
Just give me 1 second here. I'm going to try and fix this problem, because every 30 seconds practically the screen's going blank. Let me see. Might be something to do with this screensaver or something. Screensaver. So, okay, so later in the year, 1977, I actually left Prabhupada's party just after the Mayapur festival in mid-March. Prabhupada sent me back here to Australia and made me the GBC here. And then he went at the end of March, or near the end of March, he went to Bombay. Somehow or another, it was miraculous actually how he was able to travel. They had arranged a big pandal for the last week of March in Bombay, and Prabhupada was going to go there, and then of course he got really, really sick, and then it looked like that was going to be cancelled. So I had left the party and gone to Vrindavan, and then I heard from there that I got a telegram from Tamal Krishna Maharaj saying that now Prabhupada is going to Bombay after all. So we flew down there and we met him at the airport. And well, I remember when the aeroplane arrived, of course in those days there were no security restrictions, and you could kind of more or less wander onto the airfield even without too much problem. So the old Bombay domestic airport was a very small affair. And we saw the plane land and taxi up. Then we saw the stairways going up to the aircraft. And then all the passengers came down. And no Prabhupada. You know, no devotees, no Prabhupada. So we were wondering what's going on. And then we saw one of these trucks that they have, the catering trucks. And they have the back of the truck goes up, you know, on these hydraulics. And it goes up level with the aircraft, and then they wheel in the, you know, the catering trolleys and take the old ones out. So we saw that go out. It went up, and then it came straight back down again. And then Prabhupada came out from the back of it. So they had Prabhupada in a chair, and because he couldn't get down the stairs, so they actually brought the catering truck out. They put him on the truck and lowered him down like that, and then they carried him down from that, and they allowed us to take the car up to the aircraft, Prabhupada's personal car, and he got in the car. So then he drove off from the airfield, and there were about 30 of us there doing kirtan. Prabhupada came out from the airfield, and then he saw me at the side, so he stopped the car and called over and told me to get in the car. So I jumped in, and then we drove off to Hare Krishna land. And I was surprised that he'd come, and I expressed that. And Prabhupada said, yes, he said, even up till last night, there was no chance of my coming. Yeah. Anyway, somehow or another he did it, because he didn't want to miss this preaching engagement and disappoint the devotees. So we took him to Hare Krishna land. And I remember the first night, Bhavananda Prabhu was with him. And he came and he told me that Prabhupada had been passing blood during the night. So he had a lot of problems. This was from his kidneys and so many other things. Still, despite that, Prabhupada actually did the whole pandal for about 8 days or 9 days. He attended every single night. Even we had to carry him up onto the stage. But he wanted to be there just to do the preaching. So that was, you know, his enthusiasm and an energy. So he stayed on in Bombay for about another month or two. And they were working on the big temple, still constructing it. And this was April the 29th, 1977. This is from Tamal Krishna Maharaj's diary. Again, this, you know, warning about the hospitals came up. Prabhupada was concerned. So they'd been discussing about the formation of ISKCON. And Prabhupada was telling Tamal Krishna, he said that it has been a great history. Prabhupada had a sense of what he was doing, actually. Sometimes he would express surprise that how, you know, this whole ISKCON movement had suddenly developed. And sometimes, you know, he would kind of reflect on it. And he told us on the train from Allahabad, actually, in January of 77, we were traveling through the night from Allahabad to Calcutta. Rameshwara was Prabhupada's secretary, and they were talking about so many things. And Prabhupada told us, he said that history will mark this time when this Krishna consciousness movement appeared and how it saved the world. So we have yet to see that, but Prabhupada had that sense of history about what he was doing. So again, in April 29th, he was in Bombay there with Tamal Krishna, and he was telling him, this is a great history, the forming of ISKCON. So he said, anyway, now from my part, whatever is possible, I have done. So now you take care. He said, that is my request. Don't spoil it. Now it is up to you. So this ailment, I can pass away at any moment. My health is not good. I'm an old man. So it is not surprising. So now all you GBC, young boys, all American expert, you have all got intelligence, resources, so don't spoil it. Let the movement go forward more and more. Now you've got nice places filled with devotees. So don't be anxious for me. So Krishna will take care. And even if I go, where is the harm? I'm an old man. So I've given my ideas and my directions in my books. And people are appreciating. So I think from my side I have done everything. Is it not? Do you think or not? So Tamal Krishna replied, yes, you've done everything. So then Prabhupada said, so you're a young man, American boy, so you can do. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj reminded him, he said, but still we want the whole Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada. Now Prabhupada said, that will be done. Even if it is not fulfilled, there is no harm. But don't send me, in any case, to a hospital. Now I'm pointing this out. They are all useless. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said, there's no doubt that you know your body a lot better than they could ever know it. You've lived with it for so many years. So they just take somebody's body and then they make so many experiments. So Prabhupada said, yes, that is a fact, he said. So hospital, failure. So Prabhupada wasn't impressed with hospitals and, you know, the blood tests and machinery and all these things. It looks good, but at the end of the day, what the value is, that's another thing. And his point there again was that he's old, so you can't expect anything else. When you get to a certain point, the body's just not going to work anymore, and there's not much that you can do about that. It's quite futile. And he did not want to be disturbed. That's the point. He wanted to be able to live like a gentleman. Yeah, sometimes they don't even allow you that privilege, you know. They try to keep you going, you know, to the very last second or beyond, with, you know, with their machinery and these blood-sucking machines and all these things. Anyway, and then again, that was April 29th. Following week, Prabhupada had gone to Rishikesh. And they had stayed there in some life member's house. And again, Prabhupada brought this point up. He was telling Tamal Krishna, he said, "This is my request. Even if I remain unconscious," he said, "but never put me in the hospital. You can refuse that. Oh, this is our Guru Maharaj's order." In other words, if somebody comes and says, "We have to put him in the hospital." No. He's already ordered us. So he said, "You chant Hare Krishna, Bas, and let me die peacefully. That's all." And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he made the comment that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was unconscious, sometimes he would fall unconscious in ecstasy. All of his disciples, they would all gather around and just chant in his ear. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, that's all." So he said, "We'll take that example. So please don't ever doubt that. We will never let them. It will be over my dead body." Tamal Krishna is saying this. So Prabhupada said, "Yes, this is my order. If I become unconscious, still, you don't take me to the hospital." So like that, it came up several times more. Eventually Prabhupada went back to Vrindavan for the last time. I had actually, in late May, all the GBCs were suddenly called to Vrindavan because there was another crisis, and then it looked like Prabhupada was going to leave immediately. So all the GBC had been called, so I went there also. And then somehow or another Prabhupada seemed to recover again. So I'd stayed on for a couple of weeks, having spent the money to go over there, and I just wanted to be with Prabhupada anyway. And it was quite interesting, actually. Now, when I went there, you know, Prabhupada was really sick. Again, they were still having this shift system for looking after him, so somebody had to be with him 24 hours a day. So I was assigned the afternoon shift. And the first day that I arrived, then I went up on the roof with Prabhupada, and he was lying down. He was quite frail and thin by that time, physically, but he was sharp as ever he was. So I sat down, and Prabhupada looked at me. He said, "So, in Australia, you are reducing?" And I was thinking, what is he, you know, what does he mean? So I said, "Reducing, Srila Prabhupada?" He said, "Yes." He said, "In Australia, you are reducing?" Then I realized I was thinner than when he had last seen me. Because what had happened was, when I came back to Australia at the end of March, I had a reoccurrence of malaria. I'd gone to Adelaide and I got very sick on the way, because I'd had malaria a couple of times in India. And they give me some medicine, but it just suppresses it. It doesn't actually get it out of your system. So coming back into another climate after a few weeks, it all came out again. So I got very sick, and I was in the tropical disease hospital in Adelaide there for about 5 days. And so I got quite thin. I lost some weight. But at the same time, I'd read somewhere in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada made a comment that if you're serious about spiritual life, then you only eat once a day. So I was trying to be serious about my spiritual life, so I decided to just eat once a day. So anyway, now I came back to India, and Prabhupada saw me, I was thinner. "Oh, you're reducing?" Then I realized what he was saying. So I said, "Well, I have, you know, some malaria," but I said, I'm not eating as much now. Then Prabhupada said, "No," he said, "if they, you know, you must eat like this, keep your health up." I said, "Well, I read in the Bhagavatam that if you're serious about your spiritual life, then you only eat once a day." Then Prabhupada said, oh, then it is all right. So whimsically he didn't like it, but if you were doing it on, you know, with some shastric basis, all right, that's good. Some austerity like that. But anyway, the point was that despite his own illness, he was seeing, you know, immediately he saw a change in my physical appearance, he was concerned. So he was very, conscious about that kind of thing. Anyway, so I had booked at that time to come back onto Prabhupada's party for 1 month as a visiting GBC secretary. So he had a permanent secretary, that was Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And he had a system where any GBC, they could come and spend 1 month in his company. And, you know, just to get his association, get a little bit more training, etc. So I was very eager, you know. I just had a year and a half with him, but I wanted more. So I booked in for the month of October. I went back to Australia. Then we heard, you know, suddenly that Prabhupada had gone to London for Janmashtami. So I didn't have any details of that. And of course here in Australia, in those days there was no internet or anything like that. There's no, you know, computers. You know, if we sent a letter, you know, you wrote it out or typed it out on a manual typewriter and off it went, you know, it took 2 weeks to deliver or whatever. So we weren't getting very much information. So I just heard Prabhupada had gone to, you know, Bhaktivedanta Manor in London for Janmashtami. So I thought, great, that means he's getting fit. You know, he must be getting healthy again. But then immediately after that, then again he had to return. And in fact, when he was in London, he did go to the hospital. And what had happened was that he had this problem where his urinary tract was blocking up. So this happened actually in March in 1977 in Mayapur when he first got sick. One of the problems that came up was that suddenly he couldn't pass urine anymore. Very, very serious condition. If you go, you know, 1 or 2 days, you're dead. And especially if you're already sick. Fortunately, this Ayurvedic doctor, he came immediately from Calcutta. And he cured it, actually, by... He just told us, he said, you heat up some green coconuts and then open them up when they're still hot, you know, the juice is hot, and let him drink the hot dob juice. So Prabhupada did that and immediately it relieved him. So anyway, very clever. But he got to London and the same problem again came up. And it was very serious. So they had to go and consult with the local doctors. And there was one man, I think his name was McGregor, Dr. McGregor. So they consulted with him. He examined Prabhupada and he explained that there was some tissue, scar tissue, that was causing the blockage, and it had a minor operation to clear it, and then it would be all right. But he said, if you don't do this, even if somehow or another it clears by itself, it may again happen, and you don't know what will, you know, be the result. So Prabhupada actually agreed to have this minor operation. Then when they got into the hospital, just before they were taking him into the theater, all of a sudden, it cleared. So Prabhupada said, oh, now I'm okay. But then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he had in mind what the doctor had said. And he thought, well, we've gone all, you know, to the trouble of coming here. Prabhupada's already agreed. And if we don't do this, we'll have the same problem again. So they went ahead with that operation, minor operation. And, you know, Prabhupada was satisfied that it was done properly. Because, you know, no tubes or anything. No, you know, very, very little intrusion or anything. It was a simple thing, actually. So then, from there, then Prabhupada said, now, take me back to India. So they came back to Bombay. And I flew from Australia at the end of September, the last day, to meet up with Prabhupada and join the party for that month of October. So I arrived in Bombay, I think. You get in there about 5 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, I went straight to Prabhupada's rooms to report. And I was shocked when I saw him. Because I had it in my mind that because he'd gone to the West, he must have, you know, improved. But actually, when I came into his room, I saw that he drastically decreased. You know, his whole body was so thin that actually he couldn't move anymore by himself. Even to roll over in bed, he had to be helped to do that. He couldn't do it by himself, and there was no question of walking or anything. So he was spending his days just, you know, lying quietly on the bed. They were having kirtan. And ostensibly they were waiting for the temple construction to be completed so that they could have the opening of the Bombay temple, which Prabhupada was very, very keen on. You know, he had fought very hard to get that land in Juhu and to build that temple. So he wanted to see Radharasa Bihari. It's going off again. He wanted to see Radharasa Bihari installed in their new temple. But anyway, that, you know, the construction was behind schedule. So Prabhupada was just lying there day after day and then banging and clattering and, you know, chiseling the marble, and all these things were going on. So that last day when I arrived in the morning, then in the evening, then Prabhupada called all the GBCs and senior men into his room. There was probably about 9 of us. And he asked us, we had to say one by one, whether we thought that he should stay in Vrindavan or whether he should, stay in Bombay or whether he should go to Vrindavan. So 2 or 3 of the devotees gave their opinions. Then when it was my turn, because I'd just arrived, I hadn't really kind of fully tuned in to what, you know, what was happening there and what the mood was. So I didn't really know, you know, what the criteria was for making a decision. So I asked Prabhupada, is it for health or is it for preaching? So Prabhupada said, it is for health. So then I voted, you know, to go to Vrindavan, as everybody else did. Only Gopal Krishna Maharaj voted for Prabhupada to stay in Bombay because he was the GBC there, and he was concerned that if Prabhupada wasn't there, he knew all the devotees in Bombay will go with Prabhupada to Vrindavan also. And, you know, he was concerned then that the whole temple construction will fall even further behind schedule. Anyway, so we all voted that Prabhupada should go to Vrindavan. Then the next day, in the morning, I went ahead. And at that time, Bhagavad Ashraya Prabhu, he was temple president in Delhi. So I'd gone there. We'd discussed with Tamal Krishna Maharaj what we would need in Vrindavan when Prabhupada arrived. So we realized he's not going to be able to use the back bedroom in his quarters anymore, nor would he be able to go up on the roof. So we decided that we'd get a new bed and put that inside his darshan room, you know, which was the biggest room. So that was my task, was to go and buy that bed and get it to Vrindavan. And then, you know, when we completed that, ring up Bombay and tell them so that they could come. So we were fortunate. Bhagavad Ashraya had some man that used to come around to the temple. He was a woodworker and he had some furniture store. So we went to see him. He had one bed, a big double bed, and immediately he sold that to us for cost price. And we bought a double thickness cotton mattress to go with that and some bedding and things. And then we put that on a truck and sent it off to Vrindavan. Then I rang up Tamal Krishna Maharaj and told him, all right, now it's all ready. You can come. And they got on the train the same night from Bombay. So as soon as Prabhupada, you know, the word went out that Prabhupada's going back to Vrindavan, all the devotees in Bombay jumped on the train. My wife was there at that time. That was before we got married, but she was one of the devotees there. She also got on. And they all went with Prabhupada on the train to Mathura. Then the next morning, you know, it was overnight, we met them at the train station. All the devotees got off. And you know, then Prabhupada's personal party, they all got off, still no Prabhupada. And then last, right at the end, then Brahmananda Swami appeared in the doorway of the carriage, carrying Prabhupada in his arms. And he put him, we had a palanquin. So he put him in the palanquin, we carried him to the car, and then, you know, as gently as we could, we put him in the car. We had a mattress in the back. And then we took him back to Vrindavan. So then that was it. Then Prabhupada was there, you know, for the last 6 weeks there in Vrindavan. And of course he disappeared in mid-November. Anyway, so again, you know, this crisis of health, it was becoming more and more pronounced, of course. We always had that hope that somehow or another, you know, Krishna would do something and, you know, make some special arrangement so that Prabhupada could stay with us. But of course that, you know, the natural course of events took place. But, you know, this thing about the hospital kept coming up, in that last 6 weeks, Prabhupada kept warning us, you know, not to take him to the hospital. So on October the 8th, then, we'd been there about a week or so. Again, there was a conversation. And Prabhupada was lying there on the bed, and we were having a 24-hour kirtan. So he was asking, especially, he said, two songs. Brahma Samhita, Chintamani Prakara Sadmashu, and Hare Krishna Mantra. He said, you should sing these. These can be continued to be sung. But these especially. He said other ones also, but these especially he wanted to hear. So Tamal Krishna asked him if he wanted to drink something. Prabhupada said, when I want something, you give me some Charanamrita. Now up until this point, then I think for about 2 to 3 months before this, Prabhupada had not eaten anything solid. He was only drinking liquid. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was giving him some Complan, because it, you know, it's like a beverage that has lots of vitamins and different ingredients in it. So he was drinking a little Complan and some fruit juice like this, but maybe a glass and a half, and that's all he was taking for about 2 to 3 months. So when Tamal asked him, do you want something to drink, Prabhupada said, just give me some Charanamrita, that's all. So and then he asked, all right, so shall I give you some now? Prabhupada said, I'm not thirsty now, but you can give a little. But he said, don't take me to the hospital. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj again promised. He said, no, Prabhupada, under no circumstance, even if you're unconscious, we will simply chant. Prabhupada said, yes. He said, I am quite all right here. And then Tamal said, yes, we can see that, we can see. Prabhupada smiled. He said, I came back from London on account of that hospital. In other words, because he'd had to go to hospital in London, he said, then he was probably thinking, now if we continue with, they were planning to go on a farm tour. I'd received a letter actually in August where Prabhupada, I was telling Prabhupada about New Govardhan, our farm here, which we'd just purchased. And I was describing how nice it was and how much facility there was there, natural. And Prabhupada wrote back a very nice letter, and he said, yes, Krishna is the farm acharya. So, you know, Balaram has the plow, you know, and Krishna has the calf. So he said, now if I can travel, he said, I want to go on a tour all around the world to all of the farming communities. He said, and I want to make them very strong, because he wasn't able to do that. He got as far as London and then he came back, and this was why. Because he was thinking, now if I continue traveling, if there's more problems in the West, then it means the hospital. So he said, I came back from London on account of fear of being in the hospital. So now just let me lie down, and I'm quite all right here in Vrindavan. Then again, October the 10th, there was one Dr. Kapoor there. That was Prabhupada's godbrother, Albiel Kapoor. He was visiting. So they were talking about some doctor that Prabhupada knew. Some godbrother, I think, that they knew, who was also a doctor. So Dr. Kapoor was saying, well, he's perhaps a disciple of Prabhupada, means Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. So he stayed here for quite some time, and he told me that once he proposed that he would stay here permanently and treat the devotees. So then Prabhupada said, sometimes they are recommending hospitalization. Right? That was his friend, Dr. Ghosh. He'd again come. Again, he was pushing. You have to put him in the clinic. We'll look after him. Blah, blah, blah. Prabhupada said, I don't like that. So it kept coming up. And Dr. Kapoor, his godbrother, he said, no, he said, that wouldn't be good for you. Because here you have all facilities and your mind is at least at peace. But in the hospital, you won't find that peace. Not like that. There were several other occasions. Again, October the 12th, another 2 days later, they were discussing about Dr. Ghosh, and Kirtananda was there. He said, well, he's your friend, he's qualified, he's very understanding, but of course, if we put ourselves under his care, it means we have to follow his instructions. This is this Dr. Ghosh. And Prabhupada said, he instructed hospitalization. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, yes, he wants you to go to the hospital. So then Kirtananda said, well, ultimately, whatever he says, we'll have to do if we're going to accept him. But he's also very understanding, and I think in your condition, there may be no need to go to the hospital. We can get some regular care established here. And we have to have a regimen for recovery. And then Prabhupada said, no, he said, that I've already explained. I don't want to go to the hospital. So like this, it was going on about 3 or 4 more times, you know, up until Prabhupada's disappearance, he kept telling him, no hospital. So we followed that, actually. And Prabhupada was satisfied with that. There's a few more quotes here, but I'll skip some of these. His final comment was, he said, this is my only request. At the last stage, don't torture me and put me to death. Yeah. So I'm not eating anything. And if we chant, my batches chanting, then I'll hear that. So that was the way Prabhupada wanted to leave, and that was the way he did leave. Yeah, just hearing the holy names. Okay, so that's a bit of a perspective on how Prabhupada was looking at his own health. Not that he was prescribing that everybody not take medicine, but at least that was his own personal sentiment, that he didn't like to take medicines. So I mentioned last night that right from the very beginning when I joined Prabhupada's party, I saw he had so many different physical ailments. We weren't so much aware of it, you know, people are off the party. You weren't so much aware of the fact that Prabhupada was always dealing with some kind of health crisis. Because he was there every day, wherever he visited, he was there for the banquet to give the class, he would do his morning walk, you know, there'd probably be a darshan in the afternoon, so by and large, most devotees just weren't aware of, you know, what Prabhupada was coping with, you know, just to do his regular functions of preaching. He just made it look so easy. But when I got on the party, then I realized just, you know, what Prabhupada, what, you know, tolerance and, you know, determination Prabhupada had just to be able to keep on going like this. So there are a variety of different ailments. And in the volume 3 of my diary here, in the preface, I noted there that, you know, these different ailments kept coming up on a fairly frequent basis, and they were increasing. Prabhupada's health was gradually deteriorating throughout 1976, and he was getting weaker and weaker. So he suffered attacks of toothache, high blood pressure, heart palpitations, kidney disease, and flu, all with stoic indifference, and relentlessly pushed himself on despite his weakening bodily condition. It was both distressing and impressive for his servants. Distressing because there was very little that we could do to relieve him. And impressive because we saw his great and selfless determination to use his body to the last breath in the service of Lord Krishna and humanity at large. So, his mood was, you know, traveling, preaching, these are all inconveniences. But he accepted that just for the sake of being able to, you know, preach and deliver the Krishna consciousness movement to the conditioned souls. And one striking example where that, you know, came up was when we had gone to Fiji. So on the last world tour, we left Bombay on April the 18th. We flew to Melbourne. We had a week in Melbourne. Then we flew to Auckland. We had a day and a half in Auckland. Then we flew to Fiji. So then after a day in Fiji, then, you know, Mr. Punja was there. He was the main organizer. They were building this temple, the Lotoka Krishnakaliya temple. And they had, Prabhupada had gone there. He did the foundation stone ceremony, actually, during this particular visit. So they had some programs arranged. So at this time, Pushtakrishna Swami, he had just become Prabhupada's new secretary. He'd been on the party maybe about a month or a month and a half at this point. And the local GBC at that time was Guru Kripa Swami. So on the 29th of April in Fiji, Pushtakrishna and Guru Kripa had a meeting with Mr. Punja today to discuss the programs that he has proposed for the next few days. Despite his objections, they put pressure on him to cancel some of the programs that involved traveling to other parts of the island and to minimize most of the others, in the hope that Prabhupada can translate and rest instead. But their coercive tactics disturbed Mr. Punja, and so with encouragement from myself, he went to see Srila Prabhupada to get a final decision. So they were basically getting on his case. You know, we don't want Prabhupada to travel here and there, we want it to just rest. This is Fiji, it should be quiet, you know, like this. And I could see Mr. Punja was getting a little, you know, disturbed by the whole thing. So when he came out of the room there, I told him, I said, you should go and tell Prabhupada, you know, and get a decision from him. So Prabhupada immediately became angry, and he called for his secretary in GBC. Pushta Krishna explained that they were only trying to avoid inconveniencing Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada corrected him. He said, for someone my age, the inconvenience is there simply in traveling. But I have accepted that willingly for the sake of preaching. Now, we are here for the benefit of the local men. We are in their hands. So now you make arrangements for whatever programs Dayoji wants. We shall stay here as long as is required. So it was a valuable lesson for Srila Prabhupada's new secretary. This is one of the main difficulties of being part of his personal team. And Pushta Krishna Swami is now beginning to understand that Prabhupada's servants are there to assist him. We are here to see to his personal requirements and make life as easy as possible for him so that he can concentrate on his real business of spreading Krishna consciousness, especially through his book writing. Yet, at the same time, assisting Prabhupada means having to make arrangements that we know will bring personal inconvenience to him and even disruptions to his health. It's easy then to get caught in a contradiction. But Prabhupada's preaching strategy means that consideration of personal comfort and convenience is only secondary. It is his servant's business to understand and serve his desire to preach, and not our own conceptions of providing him with protective relief. So it was a conundrum. We were there to assist, make things easier for Prabhupada, but at the same time we had to assist in making arrangements that we knew would cause inconvenience and sometimes even ill health. But that's what we were there for. That was Prabhupada's desire. So from Fiji, we moved on to Hawaii, and Prabhupada spent a month in Hawaii. He had gone there specifically so that he could increase his book writing. What had happened was that over 72, 73, 74, Prabhupada, you know, developed this routine that I've already described, where he would start writing in the middle of the night. Because up until that time, ISKCON was not very big. I was just reading, actually, I think the third or fourth volume of the Leelamrita. And Prabhupada personally also told me that ISKCON didn't really take off until 1968. Because he started it in 66, he incorporated it, he got some disciples. But in middle of 68, there were only maybe five or six temples, all in America, and one in Canada. Nothing overseas. And there were about 50 or 60 devotees. By 1971, 4 years later, there were over 600 devotees and about 65 centers all over the world. You know, so in that 4 year period, everything just suddenly boomed and just took off. And, you know, Prabhupada, they started the first temples in Europe. Yeah, somebody went to Germany, Shivananda Prabhu and Krishna Das, and those six devotees, Guru Das and his wife, and Shamasunda and Malati and Mukunda Maharaj, like that, they went to London, started the preaching there. Bali Mardan came here to Australia with Upendra. They started the preaching here. And Prabhupada also in 1970 returned to India for the first time to begin his ISKCON movement in India. Up until that point, he'd just been in America. He had gone back because of his health problem in 67, but he had not been back to India for a couple of years. And then in 1970, he went back with a big group of devotees, and then everything just suddenly exploded. You know, they were doing four, five, six programs a day, traveling like mad, everywhere, because it was a sensation. So the whole movement just suddenly took off, And then during that period, it was Prabhupada went to Moscow. That was the first attempt to go there. He started the BBT officially in 1970 or 71. He formed his GBC in 1971. He started giving sannyas to some of his senior devotees and made them GBCs and started, you know, like a proper organization. And at the same time, he wrote the Nectar of Devotion. He wrote Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. He wrote the whole Krishna book. And he was working on the Bhagavatam, you know, verse for verse translation. These are the three summary studies. So he was just like working like crazy. It's unbelievable how much work he was doing. So rather than, you know, his workload being reduced, it was just increasing more and more and more over this period. So Prabhupada, you know, he adopted this very strict regimen, you know, and that's when he started writing throughout the night, because there was no possibility to do it in the day. But he knew that writing his books was the most important service that he was ever going to do. The whole movement was based on his books. So he, you know, very determinedly, he was writing and writing like this. He was training up his men how to publish his books. They started ISKCON Press. Then later on it became the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. So anyway, by 1975, Prabhupada had about 17 or 18 volumes of books that were still at the press waiting, you know, to be edited, waiting to be proofread, waiting to be typeset, you know, and printed. And he was very disturbed by it. He was getting very discouraged. He was working like crazy himself, and his disciples weren't keeping up with him. So in 1975, when he went to Los Angeles, then he took the BBT managers to task, and he told them, he said, "Now I'm here for 2 months." He said, "I want every book that is lying there at the BBT to be completed and published by the time I leave." And they said, "But Prabhupada, that's impossible. That's like 17 books in 2 months. All like 400 pages each. And then there's all the artwork as well," because Prabhupada insisted that, you know, he had to have at least a dozen pages of paintings. And then Prabhupada said, you know, "Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary." They were on a morning walk. That was all he said. And then Rameshwara, who was the BBT manager, trustee, and Radha Balabhar Prabhu, he was the managing person. So they immediately left the morning walk. They went back to the temple. They called all the BBT devotees together. And they said, "Prabhupada just ordered us to publish all the books in 2 months." So they put everybody on shift work. They were working 24 hours a day. They had 6 artists working at once on each painting. You know, everybody doing a little bit, whatever they were expert at. They had the editors up, Sanskrit editors, the compositors, everything. They were all just flat out. And by the end of the 2 months, they had actually, I think they published about 15 volumes of books. So they caught up with Prabhupada. And so in 1976, Rameshwara came to... I've got a problem there, my computer's completely cut out. Rameshwara came to see Prabhupada in Vrindavan just after the Gopunima festival, and they were trying to work out Prabhupada's travel schedule for the world tour. So then he reminded Prabhupada, he said that, "Now actually we've nearly caught you up. Yeah, we're only one volume behind. So as soon as you produce a volume, we will publish it the same month." He made that promise. So he said, "Now we want you to write more." And Prabhupada smiled. He said, "Yes." He said, "This is very good." He was very happy with that. And so he agreed to go to Hawaii for 1 month with the intention of increasing his writing. Because in Hawaii there were no visitors, not so many devotees either. And it was very nice, peaceful, quiet, good climate. Prabhupada liked it there. He had very nice quarters. So Prabhupada took that opportunity. So at the beginning of May then, we did end up going to Hawaii, and we stayed there for the whole month. And Prabhupada practically increased his writing about six to seven times the usual amount. Yeah, he was using a dictaphone. It had a counter on it, number counter, yeah, showing how much of the tape was being used up. So I used to check the counter on the dictaphone every day to see how much Prabhupada had done. Normally, he would do about 20 or 30 digits, maybe up to 50 digits if you really wrote a lot, you know, on the counter. But in Hawaii, he was going up to 300, 320 digits, you know, 6 or 7 times the amount of writing. So it was great. We were very happy with that. But at the same time, he was also, you know, facing a lot of health problems. And there were several nights when Prabhupada called me in and told me that he didn't want to take his massage. He was already at work. This was like 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night. And he called me in and he told me no massage tonight. He was already at his dictaphone. And he completed the seventh canto whilst we were there in Hawaii, I think on the Ekadasi. And he stayed up all night. He didn't even go to sleep. He'd been up all day. And another thing was that he was working on was the what we used to call the philosophy book. Now, this was a project that had been started in about 1971 or 72 by Shyamasunda when he was Prabhupada's secretary. And he had been a philosophy student. So he knew a little bit about some of the Western philosophers and Greek philosophers and things like that. And he told Prabhupada that he thought it would be very good if he could give a Vedic commentary or a viewpoint on Western philosophers. So Prabhupada said, yes, let's do it. So they began, and Shyamasunda would go in and he would give a summary of, you know, different philosophers' ideas, and then Prabhupada would give his commentary on it from the Vedic viewpoint. So that project somehow or another got stalled. Shyamasunda ended up going off to do some business and nobody else took it up. Then in 1976, then Hayagriva Prabhu, who had been Prabhupada's original English editor, he joined in 1966 in New York. He had been away for some time and now he'd just come back to the movement. So he flew into Hawaii with the intention that they would finish this philosophy book. So not only was Prabhupada doing 6 or 7 times more work on the Bhagavatam, he was also spending 2 or 3 hours every day discussing, you know, all this heavy philosophy with Hayagriva. So he was virtually like working about 14 hours a day just translating and, you know, commentating and doing all these different things. So it was very, very encouraging. But at the same time, you know, he was still having to deal with, you know, these different sicknesses that he had. I've just got my computer going again here. Let's see, here we go. So this was on May the 4th then, 1976 in Hawaii, Honolulu. Prabhupada rang his bell at 1 a.m. I jumped out of my sleeping bag next door and went in, followed by Pushtakrishna Swami. Looking strained, Prabhupada informed us that he was ill and that he would not take his usual walk or give the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. He's again having trouble with uremia, using the bathroom every hour. His feet and hands are badly swollen and he is suffering from dizzy spells. Then amazingly, and yet so typically, after telling us this, he just called us in just to tell us, you know, I'm not going to be able to do these things. He preached to the two of us on general points of philosophy for nearly an hour before sending us back to take our rest. He just couldn't resist the opportunity. We'd come in, so since we were there, you know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, he'd just been working on something in the Bhagavatam, so he just started telling us about it, and we ended up, he was preaching to us for about an hour. So he remained in his room throughout the morning. After breakfast, he took rest and did not ring to signal that he was ready for his massage until noon. So sometimes when Prabhupada was quite sick, then one of the adjustments that he would make is that he would take a little extra rest. Sometimes you just have to do that. And he would also adjust his diet, you know, whatever food that he was eating, he would adjust the spices and, you know, the ingredients just to try to help to improve things. So then he again rested for a long time in the afternoon and took rest early again in the evening. Although he normally only sleeps 3 to 4 hours on any one day, when his body gets diseased, he makes the necessary adjustments to keep it going. There doesn't seem to be any question of good health for Srila Prabhupada. There is always something that is not right. But despite the hectic pace of his preaching, he is never neglectful. He deals as carefully with his body as with any other asset that Krishna has provided for his service. So he wasn't reckless about it, but you know, he would do the maintenance wherever it was needed. So that uremia, the kidney problem, that was repeatedly coming up. And the way that Prabhupada dealt with that was the one allopathic medicine that he did sometimes take was some diuretic medicine. I forget the name of it, maybe Lasix. And small pills. So a diuretic means, you know, it sucks all the excess fluid out of your body, makes you pass. So when Prabhupada got this swelling from his kidneys not functioning, he would take a half a diuretic pill, and that would make him pass. And then when the swelling went down, then he would immediately stop the medicine. Because he did sometimes complain that the medicine itself made him dizzier, you know, than the disease did. But sometimes it was necessary to take it. So June the 24th, that's following month, we were in New Vrindavan. And then another problem came up. So because of his continued heart palpitations, Prabhupada did not feel well enough to take his daily walk. Instead, he remained in his room and he talked for a while with myself, Pushtakrishna, and Kintananda Maharaj. But still, for the sake of the devotees, he went down to the temple to greet the deities and receive Guru Puja. He also gave a class, but it was very short. So he was having, you know, problems with his heart on an ongoing basis. So it wasn't that, you know, after 1967 when that he kind of got over that major heart attack, that then all the heart problems were finished. They weren't. He would frequently get heart palpitations. But, you know, he would just go on with the program as much as he could. But sometimes, as I say, he had to make adjustments. December the 20th, 1975. I'd been on the party about a month at this point. I joined his party in late November, and then we went to Bombay. And he'd done a program at a life member's house. We got back very late. And after a long drive home, Prabhupada revealed that he was feeling too ill to continue going out on so many programs. He said that he wants at least 1 week of complete rest. He will not even take his morning walks. And he said that he wants to eat only fruit, milk, and khichdi. He looks exhausted and frail, but we are unable to help him in any useful way. Arrangements are being made to go to Australia for the Rath Yatra on January the 10th, but our plans may have to change due to Prabhupada's ill health. Moreover, some difficulty has also arisen regarding his visa. So what happened was that, in fact, that trip back to Australia for the January Rath Yatra was cancelled. So that was one adjustment that we had to make. It was unfortunate, but he just couldn't travel. It was a long way. So a couple of days later, on December the 21st, there was no morning walk today. Missing Prabhupada on the beach, Dr. Patel arrived at his apartment with his son. He took a cardiograph reading and he gave Prabhupada some pills. His diagnosis is that he has very high blood pressure. But in the evening, Prabhupada felt better and he had some guava, three paratas and a sabji that Harikesh cooked for him. As part of his cure, Prabhupada told us that for at least 1 week he wants to be freed of appointments and visitors. Harikesh, though, told me outside the room, he said that I'm doubtful that we'll be able to enforce this because Prabhupada is too enthusiastic to stop preaching and too kind to turn away any unexpected visitors. And that's exactly what happened. The very next day, Prabhupada said, so, where are the visitors? And he said, but Prabhupada, you said that you don't want any visitors. He said, no. He said, you bring them. Like that. So, and the same thing happened in 1975 when he came to Australia. He'd had a very hectic schedule. They'd just opened the Krishna Balaram Mandir on Ram Nami in India and done this big pandal in Hyderabad. And there were so many. In India, things were always hectic. Prabhupada was involved in all of the management on every level. So we had scheduled the opening of the Melbourne Temple for mid-May, maybe around about the 18th or something. You can check Korma's book. So Madhavisa wrote to Srila Prabhupada and suggested, why don't you come to Perth and spend a week or so there, and you can rest up there and, you know, get your health back. It will be very nice. There's no temple there. So then four devotees were sent to Perth. They rented a house. And then Prabhupada arrived there with Shruti Kirti and Paramahamsa was his secretary. And the whole idea was that Prabhupada was going to spend, you know, a week or 10 days in Perth with nothing to do. He'd just, you know, write his books and be peaceful. And then after the very first day, then Prabhupada called in a moga. He said, so? He said, where are the people to preach to? Yeah. And then he sent the devotees out. He told them, you go out and you bring people. So they had to go running around. They brought some, you know, university professor and some student and this and that. And they had started bringing people so that Prabhupada could have somebody to preach to. So it was impossible, you know, to put Prabhupada in a situation where he wouldn't preach, you know. Just no matter what his health was like. Anyway, so January the 9th, Madhavisa Swami, this is 76, Madhavisa Swami found early today, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj informed him that Prabhupada is not feeling well enough to travel the long distance to Melbourne for the Rath Yatra. Although extremely disappointed, Madhavisa withdrew his request for Prabhupada to attend. Yet despite his weak health, Prabhupada was still willing to go if their Rath Yatra arrangements were dependent upon his personal presence. Only after receiving Madhavisa's assurance that the festival would go on without him, that he finally decided not to go. Prabhupada was more concerned that their preaching carry on unhampered than about his own comfort. So, kidney pains and uremia. Any questions up to this point? Did you have your hand up before, Prabhupada?
Yeah. You mentioned you didn't know any of the early history of Prabhupada from that there was that one time he went for an operation in the 50s, right? And then he said in London, when he went to the hospital there, they discovered some scar tissue.
Yeah.
That would have been from that operation, I take it.
We don't know. The question was that I mentioned yesterday that in the mid-1950s, 55 or 56, Prabhupada had an actual operation on his testicles. It was apparently quite a serious operation. Then, today I mentioned that he had this operation in London in 1977. Similar kind of problem there with the urinary tract. So he was, Guru Dakshin was just wondering if the two were connected. Not that I know of. I mean,
it's all in that area of prostate.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether it was a prostate problem even. You know, it was a urinary tract blockage, that was it. Yeah.
Prostate-related. Considering that's the whole, you know, when you said yesterday that we had an operation on his, or we had an operation on his testicles, it's, you know, you need a doctor here to check that, check. But from my understanding, it's not actually, it is, it wouldn't be the urethra, it wouldn't be the testicle, it wouldn't be the tubes connecting to the prostate, which are related to, can get infected very easily and blocked very easily.
It could be. It's all speculation at this point.
These are common problems in any manner.
Yeah. Anyway, the thing is that Prabhupada had the problems.
Yeah.
You know, he went on with his preaching. That's what we're meant
to. Yeah. Maybe I missed it this evening. You might have covered it this evening, but where he went on the complan and eating only that as semi-solid for 3 months. Who made that decision? Why did he opt for not eating at all? Was it, because this is a
well, one of the problems that Prabhupada had, which I didn't mention here, but the other problem that he had, which was major, was that he had very, very bad digestion. And 1977, you know, with all the other problems, his digestion virtually packed up. It just wasn't working anymore, so he couldn't eat. Yeah, if you can't digest anything, then even something which is nutritious and delicious becomes just like poison. You put it in your body, but nothing happens. It poisons you, literally. So Prabhupada actually, his digestion just stopped. So he simply wasn't able to take any more solids. So they, you know, as a compromise, they were using this Complan, because it's like a nutrition drink and everything. But that was basically his decision. He just couldn't eat anymore. Yeah. So they were just giving him fluids. But amazingly enough, in mid-October, Prabhupada's sister turned up. Yeah, we used to call her Pishima, Bhavatarini, Prabhupada's younger sister. So her whole service to Prabhupada was cooking. Yeah, she liked to cook for him. And she would insist on cooking for him. Whenever he was in India, she would turn up and she would insist on cooking. But she always used to cook all this really, really heavy stuff. Because in Bengal, you know, they cook in mustard oil and it's really difficult to digest. And even Prabhupada had problems digesting it. So sometimes he would fight with her and he would, you know, send her back to Calcutta and, you know, like this. Anyway, so what had happened was that at the 76th Mayapur festival, prior to the festival, we spent 2 months in Mayapur, Pishima came from Calcutta and she was cooking for Prabhupada. And then one afternoon I went in, Prabhupada was complaining he had stomachache. And he actually had to take rest early that evening because he'd eaten what his sister cooked for him, but he just couldn't digest it. So then afterwards he called his sister in and he chastised her like anything. They got into a big argument and he was speaking in Bengali and he was yelling at her and he was telling her, go back to Calcutta and look after your deities. You don't come here and, you know, like this. She said, no, I won't go back like this. And she started crying and Prabhupada started yelling at her even more and like this. And then after a few minutes, she got up and went out in tears. I was sitting in the corner watching this exchange going on. I didn't know what to say or do, you know. It's completely, you know, like a family, transcendental family thing. And then after, as soon as she walked out, Prabhupada burst out laughing. And then he told me, he said, I've told her to go back to Calcutta and look after her deities. He said, she's got some idea that she wants to travel with me. And he laughed like it was the most absurd thing in the world. And then he said, this is the problem. He said that she thinks that I'm her brother. He said, for this reason, he said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas. He said, actually, he said, I could have done the same things without taking sannyas. He said, but because of this family thing, he said, therefore I have to do it. So he said, that's the problem. She thinks that I'm her brother. Anyway, so that was one exchange that he had with her. In 1976, but in 1977, when she turned up, you know, just 2 or 3 weeks before Prabhupada left, and he hadn't eaten anything for 3 months practically, she turned up, he called her in, and he immediately told her, now you cook for me. And he couldn't eat, I mean there's no question of him digesting anything, but that was her service. And then he told her, he said, I heard that somebody had said that you were not allowed to come in and see me and cook for me. It was he who said it. But like this. Anyway, he said, you go and you cook. And he told Bhakti Charu, he said, now whatever she wants to cook, you give me. Like this. He said, she's a Vaishnavi. He said, not only is she my sister, but she's my God sister. She's also initiated by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he said, he apologized to her actually, if there'd been any offense. And she was saying, no offense, you know, like this. And she was sprinkling Ganga Jal. Pishima used to walk around with a pot with Ganga Jal in it. And wherever she would go, she would sprinkle Ganga Jal. Yeah. And if she stopped to talk to somebody, you'd get a little shower of Ganga Jal. It's very nice. And, I mean, she was a very transcendental personality. So anyway, you know, she was sprinkling Ganga Jal on Prabhupada and she was going like this and chanting some Nisringa mantras for his protection and everything. So then, you know, she was very happy. She went off into the kitchen and she cooked this big, heavy meal and Prabhupada ate the whole lot. It was amazing. He hadn't eaten for 3 months. He just ate the whole thing. Anyway, transcendental dealings. Let's get back to... it's 9 o'clock now. So tomorrow we'll start talking more specifically about the incidences to do with, you know, the kidney problems. And then we'll go on to the toothaches and the heart palpitations and all these things. It's nearly 9 o'clock, so we have to finish. Does anybody have any questions? Other questions or comments? No?
You said you thought about when you dealt in medicine, you know, when you was a pharmacist, that it was mainly herbal, or was it also like just...
Well, Prabhupada used to make his own medicines up also.
Yeah.
He had day's liniment. He had some kind of elixir that he used to sell also, which was said to cure many different kinds of diseases, like a tonic.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. He used to make a lot of things himself, but he was dealing with... he was an agent for some of the big companies. So he would travel all over northern India, and he had many doctors were his customers. So he was wholesale and retail. And he was manufacturing as well, his own stuff. A bit of everything. Dr. Bose, yeah, he started off with him. He had a year or two as his manager. And then he realized that he could actually do it all himself. So he started up his own business. He didn't like working for anybody else. Prabhupada never liked being in somebody's service except Krishna. He liked, you know, he's a real Brahmin. Brahmins never take service. Yeah, they're always independent. They just depend on Krishna, that's all. I'm just trying to think. There was a story that this Dr. Abhiyal Kapoor told me, how they were in Allahabad in the 1930s. And he had some problem, and then Prabhupada told him, I'll give you some tonic. So then Dr. Kapoor, they were close friends, he said, but I want that tonic that you're taking. So then Prabhupada told him, he said, what is that? What tonic? He said, I want that tonic that gives you love of Godhead. So then Prabhupada told him, he said, I don't have the tonic. He said, but I know the formula. Yeah? And he said, and I shall preach it all over the world. And this was in the 1930s, early 1930s. Okay. So at the time, I interviewed Dr. Kapoor in Vrindavan sometime in the early 90s. And he told me that story. And he said at the time, he said, I didn't really think about it, what Prabhupada said. But he said, now looking back, he said, I can understand that even in those days, he was thinking about going all over the world and, you know, preaching like this. So, kind of interesting. Did you have a question?
Yeah,
a little louder. Yeah. The question was that she'd heard that Prabhupada sometimes would eat lots more than other people, yeah? Oh, that he claimed that he ate more than anybody else. And also that sometimes, you know, just to show a person, you know, that their concerns about, you know, health food fads and things like this, the brown rice, brown sugar crowd, which was an issue. It was an issue, you know, for many people. That Prabhupada would sometimes, you know, just deliberately do something just to kind of blow them away. I don't think that he did it. Sometimes he would tease people about things like that. And it's a fact that Prabhupada sometimes, you know, if he had a good appetite, he would eat a lot, you know. But not very often. I mean, when I saw him, breakfast, I think the entire amount that he would eat for breakfast you could just hold in the palm of your hand. And lunch, he would eat very, very slowly. And again, you know, not a huge amount. He was very careful about what he ate. He would be very careful about the spicing. He would call in the cooks every morning and discuss with them what he wanted for lunch and what spicings to use, you know, what mixtures and things. So he was always kind of adjusting his diet. Maybe in the early days, just to, you know, encourage the devotees, you know, at the Sunday feasts and everything, when he first started the Sunday feast program in New York, he would also eat very heartily. You know, I mean, he didn't have any problems with eating heartily. But at the same time, you know, he was very moderate, in at least when I was with him. He was very moderate in his eating. And I did one time walk in his room, and he had some chini and chana. Because if you're Indian, you'll know what that is. Chini and chana. Chini is sugar. Chana means freshly made cheese. Yeah, paneer. So he asked for that. And he had a bowl full of sugar and a bowl full of cheese. And he was dipping in. Spoonful of sugar, spoonful of cheese. <Like this. laughs> I only saw him do that once. But I'd heard previously that sometimes he would eat, you know, a bowl of sugar. Now, he had diabetes, and that was another health problem that he had, ongoing, was diabetes. But somehow or another, because it wasn't insulin dependent, and he would adjust for that with his, you know, dieting. And he never once mentioned to me in the year and a half that I was with him that he had diabetes, but I knew he had diabetes from, you know, what others had said, but he never mentioned it himself. But when I saw him eat that bowl of sugar, I always wondered whether that was something to do with the diabetic condition, and, you know, maybe he just needed to, I don't know, balance out his sugar level or something in his body. But I did see him do that one time. Prabhupada wasn't that fussed about, you know, brown rice or, you know, white sugar or this and that. He didn't really kind of regard it as being that important. He did want us to eat healthily. It's not that he wanted us to be unhealthy. And when we were in India sometimes, you know, devotees would arrive and they would get sick within a few weeks. And Prabhupada would always say it's because they're overeating. He said, we had a discussion about this in Vrindavan one time. He said, I was amazed when I saw how much they were eating. These Western boys, and then they complain, they get sick, they sleep too long, you know, they get dysentery, so many things. Why? Because they're overeating, that's all. Bad eating habits. I mean, we did used to eat ridiculous diets. You know, it's all prasadam, Prabhu. You know, fine. You know, well, when I first joined here in Sydney, in Glebe, I remember the Sunday feasts. Actually, the first thing is that Prabhupada came after I'd been in the temple about 6 weeks. And we used to have really nice lunches. Two or three different subjis, homemade bread, you know, rice, dal, chapatis, sweets. And this was our daily lunch. You know, we get fueled up and then we go out in Sankirtan. When Prabhupada came, he saw what we were eating for lunch. He immediately stopped it. He said, rice, dal, and chapatis, bas. He said, for the Sunday feast, they can eat opulently. But he said, it's not good for spiritual life to eat too opulently. So he wasn't happy with that. But, you know, we were kind of voracious. You know, I don't think there was anybody in the temple that was over 22 years old when I joined. The temple president was only 19. So you can imagine what it was like. And we used to have a thing called the Brahmachari offering. Right? You know, Radha Gopinath, they were already installed, so they would have their regular offerings every day. And then there was the Brahmachari offering. And what that was, at 6 o'clock, everybody, you know, we'd just eaten at 2 o'clock, but by 6 o'clock we were already voracious. So they would cook this huge pot of halva. It would be literally, you know, the ghee would be an inch thick floating on the top. They put raisins and nuts and everything else in it. And we would get that hot right out of the kitchen. We would all be lined up in the, you know, in the hallway with these big bowls. And we'd have this huge bowl of olive oil. And then we would have supper. You know. So in those days, you know, we were, it's all prasadam, Prabhu. We had this guy, Bernard. Back to Bernard. He was about 17 or 18. On a Sunday feast, he would eat at least 6 plates of prasadam. Yeah, every Sunday. And one time I saw him, he stashed 13 bowls of halava. He ate 6 plates full. He loved halava. He ate 6 plates of halava. And then he stashed another 13 bowls. And we had a double-decker bus, and he hid them all in, all over the bus. So he could have it the next day. You know. And I remember I got up to 3 plates. You know, big, huge plates we would eat. And I got up to 3 plates, and I think one Sunday I ate so much, I got such severe indigestion, I actually thought I was going to collapse and die. Yeah, it was just getting so bad. And so, yeah, I'd had about 4 plates, I think. And that taught me a lesson, so I cut back and I was only having 2 plates after that. Anyway, it's not surprising that a lot of us have liver problems and you know, other difficulties now. We weren't very sensible about the way that we used to eat. But that's not because Prabhupada told us that we should eat like that. Yeah. It's just, you know, we were suffering from sensory deprivation. Right? The no more sense gratification when you join the temple. So the only thing that we had was, you know, eating. So, anyway, I don't know whether that answers your question, but Prabhupada told us to be sensible. He was very sensible also. But he wasn't hung up on all these different fads about, you know, this food and that food. Just be intelligent about it. That's all. Eat fresh foodstuffs. Cook it nicely. Spice it nicely. You'll have some nice flavor for your tongue, and at the same time you keep your body healthy. Okay, we better finish there. We're waiting for the arati.